Hi everyone. So we originally set up a webinar, and I think we've had some technical difficulties because we've had people pop in and pop out, but not stick around. So what we've decided to do instead is we're going to do this as like a podcast, because we're looking at formats basically, haven't we? We've looked at the webinar. We thought, yeah, it was a bit presentation-y. So we're thinking of a podcast because Carolyn and I can basically wax lyrical about DISP and complaints handling, can't we?
That's why people popped off. They realized that we could talk about DISP until the cows come home.
Oh, crikey. No, I don't think
Here they go again.
I'll leave. But so what we're doing is we're going to talk, I think roughly 10 minutes, and then you can listen to this at your leisure. And then if it's a format that you like, because obviously you could listen to it in your lunch hour while you're having a coffee, during your break, whatever, then we might actually look to do it more regularly as very short, quick snippets, because we do the downloads, we do the videos, and we're just trying to think of ways that we can actually reach more of you. So
Yeah, I'm conscious that people don't always have the time or the in the right location to watch videos.
no. So
Not
we'll
always possible, is
podcast.
it?
Yeah, we'll have to come up with a name.
Like answers on a postcard, please, to all of our listeners.
If you can
Wish
think of
we
one,
call
let
our
us
podcast. Yeah.
know. So we're going to very quickly talk. This is literally going to be about 10 minutes, maybe even less, depending on how much we've got to say. We'll have to keep ourselves very strict on this.
I'm keeping a note on the time.
Yeah, keep an eye on it. We'll do a countdown. We're going to talk about 1.3 today. It's what we've been focusing on all month, and we've done quite a lot around it. And it's actually, I can't believe it's the end of January, but for
It's
next month
ridiculous.
we're going to be talking about a totally different DISP rule. So we thought this was our last chance really to get any little golden nuggets out of 1.3. So what do you make of 1.3 then?
I think it's underrated and undervalued, and I think that's because it's probably quite short in comparison to the rest of DISP, and that I think makes it seem a lot more simple than it is in reality. My sense is that it can get missed quite a lot because if you just take it as it's read, then you just do what it says, and you think you kind of nailed it. But actually, when we were doing the videos about DISP 1.3 and some of the requirements that are on businesses and what it says and actually what that means in reality, actually pulls apart for a business. So you can either, I think, nod to the rules and do what it says, or actually what you need to do in order to do a proper job of it is a lot more. A bit like root cause analysis, isn't it? It's a huge thing.
Oh, it's massive. And it's not until, I guess, you start working in businesses that you realize how much work has to go into it. But I think we
Massive amount.
found time and time again, talking to businesses that, and we've said it a while for a couple of times now, but if you don't get your board on board, that data doesn't go anywhere. And you can, we've
Yeah.
seen people that work at the coalface that collect all this information, that collate it, take the time to collate it, and then it just sort of disappears into a black hole. And there's so much learning you can take from root cause analysis. It can actually, in effect, fix problems that are systemic and habitual, and it can also, in essence, prevent complaints going forward. So I think it's really underrated in terms of what it can do for your business and your complaints handling.
Definitely. Well, I think we always get into this trap, I think, of you just deal with what's in front of you, and we're still culturally in a cycle of firefighting. So, waves of complaints, particular hot topics that suddenly come up. Everyone's, focused quite rightly from an operational perspective, turns to dealing with what's on your desk, what's coming in. But we all know, and again, it's like a variety is a spice of life when it comes to root cause analysis, because I've seen so many businesses approach it just in a load of different ways. Everything from how the customer describes what's happened, so that's their root cause analysis. Then you've got some businesses that will only do root cause analysis on what they found out is the problem or not. or you get businesses that do a hybrid of the two. So there's no consistency necessarily about what does good root cause analysis look like. So even that, you know, on the sort of like the bare bones of the rule itself seems very simple, but the reality of it is it's different.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what the focus is for the business, really. I mean, they've all got different things that they want to get out of it. So, and I guess it depends on who's looking at it. You know, if you're at the coalface, you're going to be looking at the meat and bones of the complaint, the outcome, the redress. Mm. Whereas somebody higher up might want to just know what products are causing problems or what part of the system. So it can be very difficult to make sure that it's working for you.
I think. And it's got to be humanized, isn't it? Because I've been in a situation where I've had someone that's been number crunching for me, and it's presented in such a way that my brain does not absorb that information. I need stories and stuff brought to life so that I can equate it to the day-to-day running of a business.
Mm.
Whereas sometimes statistics just, well, they can tell you everything and they can tell you nothing. And unless you've got somebody that can interpret the data as well to help you, I think, navigate where you need to start from. Like, so what's your priority? If you don't have someone who can do that, who is just a number cruncher, no disrespect to number crunchers, but you know, if that's your skill set, but actually you don't understand the what's going on underneath it and some of the pushes and pulls and tensions, you can be in danger of focusing on the wrong thing.
Yeah, I guess it's dehumanizing it, isn't it? If you're just looking at the numbers, it takes the and we're all about being human. But by dehumanizing it, it almost makes it look, I guess it makes it look like less of an impact. If you've got a spreadsheet full of numbers and pie charts and what have you, that doesn't tell you the full story. It doesn't tell you the impact on your customers. So
we always talk about that, don't we? About you've got to remember that each file you pick up, each letter you deal with, each phone call you take, it's more than a number. Mm. And that's what data does. It dehumanizes actions and people into numbers. So you need to be able to put that all back into it again, so it means something and actually drives behavior that means that businesses want to change something. Because of the human element to it, not because of the numbers.
No, exactly. It's funny, I was writing something the other day. Escapes me what it was, but I was talking about how root cause analysis dehumanizing it. I've forgotten where I'm going with this. Middle-aged brain strikes again. But I think, you know, you have to take a step back from your root cause analysis and work out whether it's working for you. If it does dehumanize things, then I would say it's not working. I would say that that's numbers and pie charts are fantastic, but you need to stay in touch with the human stories in order to realize what the impact is. I would say it was not working if you're just looking at the numbers.
No, and I think that's where sort of like DISP 1.3 in particular can lead businesses astray, because it becomes quite a task driven, data heavy, compliancy feel to it all.
And
I know there has to be, and of course there's got to be an element of that in everything we do, otherwise we just run amok and go, you know, crazy, do all sorts of strange things that we shouldn't be doing. There's always a method to it, but you don't want that to take over common sense.
No, it has to work for you. You can't it has to be targeted and it has to be working for you. But I guess looking at DISP 1.3, I mean, it's dated, isn't it? It really is dated. So if your root cause analysis is following the formula in the FCA as it, you know, straightforward as they've put it, you're not going to get an awful lot out of it. You've got to tinker and tailor with it to make it work for you. It's all well, I mean, obviously it's got to be in a format that the FCA can read. So there isn't a certain amount of having to cut your cloth so that it works for the FCA. but it's also got to work for you as a business. And I think it becomes formulaic, boring, dull, a necessity if you don't make it work for you. It just becomes, oh, it's a ticker box, isn't it? So you really got to make it work for you. Otherwise, there's no point doing it. You'll just get your you'll get your knuckles wrapped from the FCA for not. But I find it frustrating when businesses aren't able to make something that is valuable work for them.
Yeah. Yeah, talk about it's a lost opportunity, which I know sounds really glib, and you know, it's one of those phrases that kind of makes me
a gift.
but it properly is. And if you just want to keep fighting fires, then don't look for patterns and don't try and deal with stuff on a larger scale. But if you actually want to create an environment where a lot of your customers get a much better experience, you've got to do proper root cause analysis. You've got to learn. That's the bottom line, isn't it?
DISP says you've got to learn your lessons.
So yeah.
You know, it's all well and good. And I'll be honest, you know, speaking from as an ex-complaint handler, seeing the same complaint time and time again makes you demoralizes you, makes you question more complaints handling. And it's not good for businesses. How much time and money do you want to invest in seeing the same complaint time and time again, rather than just fixing the problem? And root cause analysis can help.
The interesting thing about that is that if you when you talk to frontline staff as well, they'll tell you, we see this all the time.
Yeah.
And then the question of like, so what are you doing about it? Just tumbleweed. And that's the bit about whether you're bored or on board, or whether actually the insights that you're getting from some of the complaints that you're receiving are being looked at from a strategic rather than a tactical basis. I'm always about this. You have to think about complaints in a strategic frame of mind, as well as how do we sort out people in the here and now as well. You need the combination of both. So top and tailing, really, complaint handling.
It was. Top to bottom, isn't it, really? It doesn't work. I mean, I think complaint handling can be very bitty anyway, because it doesn't, I think in some respects people see it as almost like an inevitable byproduct of interacting with people. You are going to get complaints, to an extent, but I think the problem comes is when you look at the complaints process, which has been going for 20 years now, and it had predecessor schemes. So the FOS was a patchwork of different schemes. The complaints handling has become a patchwork of DISP rules that now are dated. And it means there's no linear process. It's, you get a complaint in, then you have to do this, then you have to look at the complaint, then the complaint goes to the FOS. It's really, really bitty. And I think for a customer going through that, it just adds to the frustration.
Yeah. I think you're knackered before you even start.
Oh, it's demoralising. It is. It's demoralising for the people that have got to work within the confines of that bitty process. It's demoralising for the customer. And I think it also grinds businesses down, you know, in terms of investment in that bittiness. And 1.3, with the greatest of respect to 1.3, there is an awful lot in there, but it's dated. You can tell it's dated by the amount of emphasis on telephones. Yes, there's still, you know, the top way that people make a complaint, but we have so many channels of communication now. It hasn't moved with the times.
No.
Having a look at your own process, taking a step back and saying, well, how can we get it to join up properly? How can we make it easier for the customer? Then means that it's easier for you to make it more transparent, which is a requirement of 1.3. And we have actually, I don't know, we've actually been around the web, but looking at different businesses and how transparent they are with their complaints handling. Not very, if I'm honest with you, not very. Some of them have put more thought into it, but it does very much feel like a 1.3 tick box, we've done it. And you've got to think about what your what your customer knows. They don't know what you know. So if your complaints process document or page, which is usually the case, isn't very clear, it's not going to be helpful. You're not managing expectations. So, it all needs work, really, I think, in terms of what customers expect now?
Oh, definitely. Just well, that's probably one for a whole nother podcast in terms of like customer, because you can imagine, can't you, customer expectations. But we are in a different world. And to your point about, you know, the rules that we're working to at the moment are, you know, 20 odd years. I worked for one of the predecessor schemes before that. So the rules are almost, I would say, almost 30 years old, if you take into account some of the predecessor schemes as well. So yeah, that heavy reliance on phone calls and writing letters. Twitter wasn't even a glint in the rulemaker's eyes when that was produced.
No.
So that's a significant step that we've made in terms of social media and customer behaviour. And like you say, that's not reflected in 1.3.
No, it's not. Again, it's something else we can talk about. We've talked about it in the download. If you've not seen the download, then do download it. But it's we talk about tech bias, which is really a thing, genuinely a thing, where businesses, in essence, put an awful lot into dealing with hashtags and tweets. But when it comes to letter writing, because people do still write letters, especially older generations, there is a bias towards sorting out what's happening on Twitter rather than dealing with letters. And I think, talking about this, we think it's because it is out in the Twitter sphere and lots of people see it. But not to forget that people writing letters will tell other people.
Yeah, of course.
So people have to be treated equally.
Yes, and there is still a complete, there is a variance, shall we say, in terms of how quickly you get a response. And sometimes also I'd say the type of response and the quality of it, depending on what channel you use. And that's a real resource challenge for businesses in terms of people and skill set.
Totally. Again, that's something else we could talk about.
We've just found about four different topics to cover.
Would you like us to talk about C or D? But so 1.3, it's got a lot in it, but it does need you to think how you would apply it today.
Definitely agree with that.
So that's it for this little podcast, our little dip in, dipping our toe, as it were. But I think we're going to look at whether it will be something that you would like. I think we're going to ask the question on LinkedIn as well, so have a listen to this one. Treat it as a pilot and then we'll see what people want. But so we're going to leave it there. So thanks for listening and we'll hopefully see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye.